As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/leagueshow.
Mick Mack's back, there are calls for the Lambo to be driven out of Portman Road, and a boot went high on Dale Fry's eye. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Hi gang, Matt Davis-Adams here to run down all the big EFL news and notes. I'm joined by the only man with warm balls this weekend. I'm talking, of course, about Sam Parkin and his starring role in the draw for the quarterfinals of the Papa John's Trophy. Very professional, Sam. Were you not tempted to go full Rod Stewart?
Nah, Crouchy did it the other day. Overkill. Just get the job done, because Colin wasn't going to be sympathetic if I messed that up, as you can all imagine. He was like, don't mess it up. Don't mess it up, repeatedly. So I just sweated and shaked a little bit and got it done.
Yeah, well, he did a very good job. Like the rest of us, Adrian Clarke's been drawn at home for the best part of a year. Itching for an away fixture then, Clarkie?
Absolutely, yeah. Although I was in the garden all weekend, making snowmen, snowball fights, sledging. Absolutely brilliant. Loved it.
Good stuff. Michelle Owen is back with us too. Michelle, quite the weekend for you as well, I hear. First lined up to cover the mighty Chelsea women, only for that to get postponed. And then what happened?
Well, actually, that wasn't the first thing. I was meant to be at QPR Derby, but due to rejigs and various things, that got cancelled. So, not funnily enough, it's not funny at all. Our dog was really unwell, and then it was a good thing I was here on Saturday. So that was a nice coincidence that the game was called off. And then, yeah, we wake up to a lovely snow day on the Sunday. And then it's quite a serious story, but it has a happy ending. We're walking out of our close down the road. The snow's pretty much thawed by then. A few cars out and about, and we just hear someone scream, "No, no, no." And we looked up and saw literally just someone, it looked like they were flying in front of us and land on the pavement in bright yellow, ran over, and a car had plunged into a cyclist. Now, all is well. I feel like at this point I have to say all is well. Like, he was there for a while, and we live next door to like six nurses and doctors. So they sorted it out while we just gave cups of tea and hot water bottles. But the first thing that happened as I ran over was the dog, our dog Barney, suddenly had a resurgence of health, sprinted over, and this poor man lying face down the ground, what's the first thing that happens as he's coming around? He's being licked, being given the kiss of life by my dog. So I was a little bit mortified. I was like, "Are you okay?" That's my dog was literally, yeah, licking everything off his face. So yeah, that was quite an eventful afternoon. Rather than being at the Chelsea-Bristol City game, I was there with my dog, suddenly feeling fine, helping a cyclist that had been knocked off his bike. Not my usual weekend.
Well, will the next part of the pod be as dramatic as that story? Almost certainly not. It is time, though, for the most acronym-filled feature in podcasting. Yes, it's EFL-FAC-POTW, or EFL Factpotwer, if you'd rather. Tweak to the usual format, 15 seconds to tell us which EFL player impressed most in the cup in the weekend pass. We're sticking the 15-second timer on this. Sam, you can go first. Your time starts now.
Yeah, I'm going for Liam Cullen at Swansea. Got a brace against Forest, partly because you're a Forest fan, Matt, and it's always amusing, and I enjoyed that thoroughly that they got smashed. Could easily have gone for Matt Grimes, scored a brilliant goal, but this lad's had a tough season, just three starts in the league, not done brilliantly when he's been given an opportunity. Nice brace from him. Fantastic. Well done, mate.
Good. Yeah, enjoyed reliving that. Nobody's gone for Carl Jenkinson or Gaetan Bong, I noticed, which is not that surprising. Michelle, I think you've got the best pick here. You've gone for Ben Tozer. So your 15 seconds to tell us why starts now.
Yeah, maybe an obvious pick, but Cheltenham defender Ben Tozer, led by example, had that renowned long throw in that followers of Cheltenham know only too well, and that led to Alfie May putting Cheltenham ahead. Also made a fantastic goal line clearance from Benjamin Medhi's effort. Was fabulous.
And got man marked by Pep Guardiola while he tried to take a throw in, which was one of the highlights.
That was very funny. He got under his skin for sure.
Okay, I'm going to go next because I've picked what I think is by a wide margin the weakest selection of the four. So just get it out of the way. And my 15 seconds talking about Naki Wells starts now. A goal and an assist for the Bristol City striker as the Robins dumped Millwall out of the cup at the Den. A much needed boost for the Bermudan who'd gone 10 games without scoring before Saturday, but was the key man here as City made it through to round five for just the second time in 20 years.
Just quickly, why is he no longer Naki Wells? Just out of interest, because I've heard a few people go down this route.
Yeah, I don't know, but I heard him on another podcast, which I won't name, and he said it's Naki, not Naki.
That's the type of answer I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, whenever a player says this is how you say my name, that's what I tend to go with, even though it can be extremely difficult to get them to tell you how to say said name. No such problems with Callum Stiles, Adrian. We can all pronounce that fairly easily. Your 15 seconds to convince us that he's the pick of the week starts now.
Look, it's not a fashionable pick, but Barnsley's Callum Stiles was brilliant in an understatedly excellent 1-0 win against Norwich. Busy throughout, he scored a lovely goal and crucially sprinted back to make a great goal-saving block near the end. Wonder Brentford are sniffing around him.
Good timing. Really good timing that. Good. Enjoyed that. Head to at the Totally Show on Twitter to vote. Right, let's get to the championship.
Ronaldo and Messi, a rivalry for our times. But like all those striving to be the best in their chosen field, they need each other. They drive each other on. Like me and Jeff, the other voiceover guy. Hey, Jeff?
Introducing toothpaste. It's paste for your teeth.
God, he's good. Well, something that is unrivaled is Paddy Power's offer of a free bet if one leg of your 4+4 ACCA lets you down.
Paddy Power.
Stay in your lane, Jeff. Max free bet £10. Min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets and enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines. Mick McCarthy is back. He's the new Cardiff boss after six straight defeats saw the end of Neil Harris's reign with the Bluebirds. Some wages have been paid at Derby County, but the takeover saga rumbles on. Bright Estay Samuel will be leaving QPR for Fenerbahce this month rather than the end of the season. And on the pitch, there were wins for Watford, Derby and Blackburn, whilst Preston and Reading shared the points, but not the goals. So he's back up in the game, running things to keep his swing, letting all the people know that he's back to run the show. Big Mick energy in South Wales then. When the news broke that Neil Harris was gone, we thought Paul Cook might be the man to take it. Cardiff, though, had other plans. Last time Mick was in an EFL dugout, 2018, in charge of Ipswich. Michelle, it feels kind of obvious to say that the response here is kind of meh. This is not very inspiring. So what are the positives of appointing Mick McCarthy in 2021?
Well, I was at the game on Wednesday when Cardiff lost to QPR, and yeah, there was just that sort of feeling that if Harris lost, he was gone. And he took 45 minutes to come out for his post-match, so I wondered if something had been said then, but apparently not. So when we heard about McCarthy being appointed, was a little bit surprised, because perhaps not the most inspiring choice. I think from what I've heard, he's a very good man manager. He can put his arm around a player, and we've seen the pictures. He literally put his arm around a player. I've already seen a photo of it with Harry Wilson, and get their confidence back up. You look across that Cardiff team. They had no width. They had no sparkle. Okay, they're missing a few key players like Lee Tomlin. There's no playmaker there right now. There's no excitement for Cardiff. And I know under Neil Warnock, perhaps they didn't always have that flair. But under Neil Harris, they did lose their way a bit. And I felt for him because he had a bad run back in November and then he won a load on the bounce. But this time he hasn't been given the patience. So I think he will come in. Players like Josh Murphy, Harry Wilson for Cardiff, he can do that arm round tactic. He can give them a boost and give them a bit of confidence, because across the team, that's just absolutely lacking now. They need some flair and they just need a bit of creativity and a bit of, it seems it's just lacking a bit of fun, that whole squad. Just a bit dour and down.
Sam, Neil Warnock, former Cardiff manager, I wonder if his appointment at Borough did anything to influence Cardiff's thinking here. You know, similar sort of situation that he came into there last time around. They're thinking steady hand on the tiller, get us through to the end of the season.
Yeah, maybe. I agree with Michelle in terms of the man management. Mick was interested in taking me to Sunderland once and I was quite excited at the prospect, but he came to watch me and I was useless. And that was the end of that interest, sadly. I think Tommy Mooney scored twice and he nearly took Tommy, and Tommy was about 40 by that stage. But I've always thought I'd like to play for him, and friends of mine have really enjoyed it. I was really underwhelmed when I saw the appointment, that said, but I'd like to point you towards Danny Gabbadon's tweets at this point, because I wholeheartedly agree with Gabs. It's obviously Cardiff man. For a safe pair of hands to the end of the season, can see the logic, no problem, but then there has to be a plan.
Clarkie, how do you feel if you're Max Watters? This might have happened to you in your career before. You sign for one manager and then a couple of weeks later you're working for somebody else. It's got to be a bit disconcerting.
Yeah, it's not ideal timing, is it? It's his dream move and he would have had other options as well. So yeah, the manager that really wanted you is no longer there. It's not good. Yeah, it has happened to me. I agreed to join Southend United when Ronnie Whelan was the manager, and then he resigned. Maybe because of that, I don't know. So I signed for the team with no manager, and that was a bit risky. Turned out to be Alvin Martin, who was by and large good with me, so it was okay. But yeah, it's not easy for Watters. Obviously, Perry and G's coming in from Crewe as well. So we'll see how it goes. I endorse exactly what the other guys have said. He does have a track record. I know that people want to label him a dinosaur, but won the league, didn't he, with Sunderland and Wolves, and I thought did a pretty good job with Ipswich and Millwall in the Championship on not great budgets. So tried and tested, and probably the right guy to get to the end of the season, as Sam says, with this group of players before there's a rebuild and maybe a rebrand. I agree. I remember saying this last year when we were sat in the studio, that squad needed ripping up and starting again. And they sort of, it's a bit of a half measure. This summer, I think they really do need to do that.
Well, he'll be back in Yorkshire, Big Mick, for his first game. It is away to Barnsley on Wednesday night. Let's get some actual football then. Friday night football, in fact. It was a great Potteries throwdown for Watford, as a classic Deeney pen and a smashing Saar goal bought the Hornets 3 points against Stoke. Adrian, this felt like Troy Deeney at his best. If ever anyone was going to do it on a cold Friday night in Stoke, it was going to be Deeney.
Yeah, he made the difference, didn't he? It was interesting. I know Sam referenced it on the Quest show, just sort of dropping in behind and linking up beautifully. It was a gorgeous through ball, wasn't it, for Saar's goal, and a cracking finish, I have to say, right across the keeper. And it wasn't a great game. It wasn't full of sort of enterprising football, but Deeney's football brain, I think, came to the fore. It's not just about brawn with him. He's definitely got football intelligence as well. It was a slightly imbalanced team, I thought, from Watford, with cleverly playing on the right, but also tucking in. I sort of always think that's a bit hard on the wide player to do that. I remember Aaron Ramsey having to do that a lot for Arsenal. He can do it cleverly, but it's not ideal. But look, you can't knock this new manager, can you? I think four efficient wins out of five now for Watford. Three wins in a row. So they're looking solid. And Francisco Sierra Alta has come into the team and done really well under the new gaffer too.
He's clever, isn't he, Michel Zisco, to try and get Troy Deeney on side. He was excellent. I love him because he gives everything. He always gives me the best. We've seen in recent months and years that you kind of need Troy on the same page as you if you're going to stay in the Watford job for more than 6 months.
Yeah, especially what we heard about what happened when Ivic went and things and the rumours behind that. He's certainly knows how to keep Troy Deeney happy and with that praise. It was only Watford's third away league win of the season, but everyone I've sort of spoken to when we spoke about it on Quest a couple of weeks ago is we're not quite sure what their identity is, and maybe he wants to make Deeney, you know, the heart of the squad again, pushing them forward. And Troy Deeney loves that, doesn't he? And suddenly they're back in third place, and we know the Championship's crazy and teams can go up, down in places all the time. But although Swansea have played a game more, a few weeks ago I was thinking, yeah, no, I do really fancy Swansea for that second place. But now with Watford firing again, yeah, they've just creeped back up. Although the teams around them do have games in hand, so they're just going to have to stay consistent. And Stoke is not an easy place to go and get a win, so it's a big win for them.
What's happened to Stoke, Sam? Just looking at their recent results, they haven't won a game since the 19th of December. Is it injuries the biggest factor here, or is there something else that you've noticed?
I just think they're a bit short, to be honest. I think the obvious thing from this particular defeat was the lack of a striker. I think that Campbell's injury has really killed them, to be quite frank. I think he's brought the average age down considerably. He's obviously introduced some younger players like Suter at the back, for example. But looking at that in isolation, I think for me, they'd be better in a 4-2-3-1 with Powell playing off a striker. I think Gregory's going to be available soon. Fletcher obviously came on and scored. And Michael O'Neill has spoken that he's not going to have the ability to bring someone in at the moment. And it's hard to go and get a striker that's going to transform your fortunes in January. But to me, they look better in that setup. And I think with the signing of Doughty in particular, obviously they've got some youthful players in on loan like Clark and Matondo just for this season. But having been a lot of people's dark horses, I think they may just fall short this year, and it'll be about next season for Michael O'Neill when he's had an opportunity to really mould. And still, you can't forget the problems there's been at that club. You know, the high wages, the players that they've had to move on, the players that maybe are still there that don't want to be at the club. So I think next season's going to be the one for Stoke, to be quite frank. But I'd be surprised if they don't just alter the system.
Great goal, wasn't it? Loved it.
Fletcher. Joe Allen looking for Fletcher. Very neatly worked and beautifully finished off too. Stoke City aren't giving up on this game without a fight.
I thought it was a beautiful little 1-2 between Fletcher and Allen. Two players of pedigree. I think Fletcher coming back is big, isn't it? And I completely agree. I think Powell off of Fletcher or Vokes or even a Gregory is probably the way forward with Campbell out for a while.
So that was Friday. Meanwhile, on Sunday at the Riverside, Blackburn beat Middlesbrough by 1-0. Joe Rothwell got it. The real headline, though, Jared Branthwaite's high boot on Dale Fry's face. If you've not seen it yet, don't bother. It's horrid. Neil Warnock, understandably angry about the whole situation. Doctor says he's a millimetre from losing our ball. That turned all game for me, that. I was gutted for Dale when he saw the mess he were in. He saw it, Michelle, but the referee somehow didn't think it was a penalty. We spoke last week about how the standard of officiating in the Championship isn't great. This was incredible that the official managed to miss it.
Yeah, I suppose it's always easier in hindsight when you have replays and slow-mo, but even in real time, it looked like a kung fu kick sort of thing. It's not malicious. You know, I'm pretty sure it's from what I've seen that he was going for the ball and would never mean to do that. And Dale Fry was stooping in a little bit as well. And we've seen high boots given for far, far less this season. We couldn't quite work out on Wednesday whether Charlie Austin had that goal disallowed for a high boot. I saw Famara Giju get a second yellow and sent off a few weeks ago for attempting an overhead kick. So you'd think it was actually something that the referees were keeping an eye out for this season, given those instances and a few more as well. And oh, have you seen the pictures of Dale Fry's eye after? It's absolutely horrendous. And look, we know Neil Warnock does like to have a rant about a referee occasionally. So, yeah, I don't know how he's missed it, because if you're looking at the action, if you're looking at the ball, no matter which way you look at it, a sort of 360 view, it's quite clear what happened. It's quite clear that his foot was really high. And how does he think it happened? You know, don't you go and speak to your assistant about that? And how have they not spotted it? So I can see why Warnock was so aggrieved. But of course, there was the rest of the game left after that.
Yeah, it was a somewhat convenient explanation. Sam, when that happens, something like that happens to a teammate, is it difficult for the rest of you to shake it off and forget about it? Or do you just accept that that's going to happen every so often and get on with the game?
Yeah, I think you just get on with it. Obviously, you're concerned for your teammate. Yeah, I think it was a penalty, and it was a red card, and it would have changed the complexion of the game, no doubt. So I can understand why Neil Warnock's upset about that. Of course, he'd be concerned about his player's welfare and his player's injury and the safety. But if the hand was, if it was on the other foot, he probably would have said it was an innocuous challenge and that the player didn't mean it. Do you know what I mean? So I can't take Neil Warnock at face value there, really. I think, he probably would have said that it was just an innocuous challenge had it been his player. The only thing I will say is we're not there. We don't know what gets said. If Branthwaite has been remorseful and apologetic and all that, we don't know what's gone on and what's prompted that at full time. In my experience, I had my face rearranged by Dan Harding's left boot and I got no apology. I think it wasn't Dan. I later played with Dan, but I think it was more his teammates. They were quite a physical, aggressive Brighton side, and it was a playoff game as well. But I've always gone in the dressing room if I've injured someone. I remember catching Gary Kelly with an elbow, really nasty cut, winning at half time to apologise. You know, we don't know what's gone on that day and what's might have irked all the Middlesbrough players as well. So we don't know. But I think to go and berate a young lad if he has apologised and he has been remorseful is poor form from Neil Warnock.
It's a bit intimidating as well, isn't it, for Warnock to sort of confront a young lad like that. And it's hard for a rookie teenager as well, to just go into the dressing room and, you know, an alien environment and apologise. So I wouldn't dig him out for that. He didn't mean it. He didn't mean to hurt him. Yeah, but it was a pen and it should have been a red.
Yeah, certainly looked that way. Let's have a chat about some transfers of note. Not too many that have really caught the eye since last we met. Producer Abby is desperate for me to mention Harry Darling, who signed for MK Dons. Apparently this is in homage to Blackadder, but I've got to confess I've never seen Blackadder. So,
what do you want, darling?
Yeah, Abby looks very cross about that, but that's just a fact. Some that have happened. Clough leaves Forest. That's not a 30-year-old headline. Zach has joined Stoke. Good on him. Saw the best years of his career wasted at the City Ground. Clarky, Forest have got Filip Krivinovic in from West Brom. Did you like him last season?
He was pretty good, yeah. I slightly surprised that West Brom had got rid of him. I guess that he's probably not a Sam Allardyce type player, but he was someone that was creative, could play. I think he was at his best as a sort of number 10, really. I don't know whether Forrest are in desperate need of one of those at the moment or not. He can play as a more orthodox midfielder as well. Yeah, he's busy, he's skillful, will be good over set plays, can deliver quality into the box. So that it's a decent acquisition. He comes from Benfica. He's a player of high pedigree. So look, will he make the difference on his own to Nottingham Forest? No, but I do feel that they need someone creative in that side just to get them going.
Any other transfers that anybody's noticed that they would like to talk about?
It hasn't happened yet, but it's just one that's been rumbling on for a little while. Kay Gordon, the youngster at Derby, reportedly now Liverpool sort of leading the race to perhaps secure a signature from him, which they can't do yet because he's a youngster and what have you. But apparently £1 million they're going to pay for him. He can't sign professional terms yet. I thought Manchester United were meant to be interested in Tottenham as well. I just wonder how much Wayne Rooney will influence him too. Because if you're Kay Gordon, you're a 16-year-old and Wayne Rooney is your manager and he's an attacking player, surely you go to him for some words of wisdom. So interesting to see sort of which way he's swayed, and I'm quite intrigued to see what's going to happen because he's been in the squad a few times now with Derby, hasn't he? And whether Rooney will utilise him, how much he'll use him, and what we see from him before he, it seems, inevitably goes to a big club.
I think I alluded to it on Saturday. I think Stefan Johansson might be going to QPR, and he's obviously going to replicate what he did for Fulham, fire QPR all the way up the table and win the playoffs.
Obviously, yeah. I think Dan Crowley going to Hull is interesting from Birmingham. Talented boy at Arsenal. Didn't quite make it. Went to Holland. Did well. Came back to Birmingham. So he's someone that can help them with their sort of push for promotion. Also, a sort of triple signing from Salford. You knew that Salford were going to be active in this window. Paul Coutts from Fleetwood, I think, is a good acquisition. Tom James on loan from Hibs. Now, Tom James has been excellent for Wigan so far this season. Scored one amazing goal. I think it was against Portsmouth, but he scored a few this season. So that's a smart one. And Robbie Gotts, young lad from Leeds up top, he scored at the weekend. So, yeah, watch Salford go with these three new faces, I think.
Good stuff. In spite of overwhelming evidence to the contrary, we still believe we can pick a winning midweek ACCA with the help of our sponsor, Paddy Power. Let's have a championship selection from you, please, Michelle.
Okay, I'm going for Bristol City to beat Huddersfield, which is probably quite stupid because Huddersfield seems so unpredictable. They've had a few sort of surprise, impressive results. But Bristol City might just be finding their feet a little. Despite that loss to Norwich, they managed to overcome their bogey side, Preston, before that. Thrashed Millwall in the FA Cup at the weekend. And as you said, Nicky Onaki Wells was outstanding. And they had a few standout performances. Maybe things for Dean Holder just starting to click a little bit back into place. At home at Ashton Gate as well. Fancy them for that.
Abby, what odds can you give us on that, please?
Well, Paddy Power have them as the favourites, 13-10, whilst Huddersfield are 19-10. So, Paddy Power, I don't think it's a stupid choice.
And they're usually right. All right, we'll keep building that as we go on, but League One is up next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League One headlines: Hull smash 4 past Portsmouth to remain top of the division on 45 points with Lincoln, who also won. Peterborough are up to third following their success at Ipswich. After their shocking start to the season, Oxford now into the top half of the table. Rochdale continue to have high scoring draws, and at the bottom, Wimbledon out of the relegation zone following their draw with Crewe. Only one place we can begin though, that's Hull's thumping 4-0 win over Portsmouth at Fratton Park. Clarky, are you an honest man, or are you going to tell me that you saw this coming?
Oh no, absolutely, I didn't see this coming. I thought this was going to be a really low scoring game, two teams that had been defending superbly in the run up to it. But Pompey had an off day, didn't they? It happens. And Hull were really, really clinical. I thought it was an outstanding performance from them in terms of energy and work rate and just general busyness. And maybe the front three kind of set the tone for that. You've got White, who's come in on loan. Lewis Potter up front with Wilkes as well. That's a front three that's full of sort of enterprise and energy, and behind them, the midfield, any midfield containing Honeyman is bright as well. So yeah, they're a team that have got good vibes at the moment. Very, very sort of effervescent Hull City. Contrast really to what we saw from them after January last season. So yeah, full credit to them. Took their chances well in the game and thoroughly deserved the win. We have to consider them, you know, favourites probably to get top two now.
Sam, have we been giving Grant McCann enough credit this season, do you think? Working with one arm tied behind his back in a lot of ways, we know what a mess Hull have been behind the scenes for the last few years. And as Clarkie says, really turned it round from the second half of last season.
I think we have on this podcast, yeah. Because I think it surprised all of us. The mess that place was in last year, you would never have imagined them to be able to be this consistent. And having seen them on a few occasions, it's funny because they don't really excite you. They don't blow you away. I saw them smashed at Fleetwood early part of the season, but just really consistent and completely dominated that game. I think the midfield's excellent to be doing it without. I know McGinnis came on and scored, but I spoke about the lack of a real focal point the other day. So to be doing it with Lewis Potter and Wilkes and White, I think it's outstanding, and a really youthful defence. The two lads, Device and Burke, I thought were excellent at times last season. That partnership's obviously been broken up by Device leaving for QPR and Burke being suspended. Yet they put on a brilliant performance, completely dominated the opening 20 minutes. I watched the first half. Portsmouth could hardly get out. Not loads on the goal, but just really pushed Portsmouth back. Curtis was dreadful coming back in. Harness is having a really difficult time. Forced Kenny Jackett into two changes at the break. And if anything, they were worse in the second half. Changed it and tried to play through Hull City a little bit more with more technical passing midfielders in the side, and didn't work. So great day for Hull City. And yeah, both of them, I think, yeah, big title contenders now. Big title contenders. Portsmouth will come back from this, but it was a good day for Hull.
Just a quickie, that they've scored in all but two games, Hull City, this season, which I think is a tremendous achievement, given that they don't have that one mega prolific frontman. So yeah, they've got goals from everywhere.
Michelle Pompey had kept six clean sheets in a row in the league before this. Does that make it easier or more difficult to get over this? Can you just say, oh, well, we'll get back to what we were doing in the last couple of weeks and this was just a blip, or was it something more serious than that?
Oh, you'd hope it's just a blip. I mean, they had 11 shots themselves, but only one on target. So, considering their form before, you'd maybe just put it down to an off day. One transfer I could have mentioned before was actually George Byers has gone there on loan from Swansea. And I've seen him play for Swansea quite a lot. I was quite surprised he's moved away, but with them signing Conor Hourihan, that's probably why. So I think he might be quite a nice addition into their midfield, push things forward a little bit. And like the guys said there, they're not out of it by any means. It was a very big game in terms of, you look at both of them, whether on points now, it moves Hull 3 points above them. So it was a massive game for both of them. But it's not going to blow their season apart or anything, I don't think.
That's a great point from Michelle, because they've lacked an out and out number 10, I would say, and they've shuffled it around recently and had great success playing more of a front two. But Byers has been really good when I've seen him on occasions, and Charlie Daniels as well coming in to bolster them at left back, which I think's been a bit of a problem area. If Charlie can replicate anything that he has been during his Championship and Premier League career, I think he's been really good for Shrewsbury in the last couple of outings. So that looks like a clever bit of business. So yeah, I think that the business they've done so far, excellent.
Can I just say, guys, what about the groundsman at Fratton Park? The stripes on that pitch, a different class, aren't they? I mean, is it just me that's impressed by this kind of thing? They're very thin and they go crisscross. I just think there's not enough of that around the EFL. I want to see.
I think there's some rules like that you couldn't do that for a while or something. I can't remember. Am I being really silly or was that a dream?
There was definitely a rule against something. Circular ones, Michelle. And sort
yeah,
of
Leicester got a bit crazy with it, didn't they? I think.
That but I just love the sort of the thinness. It's a single old school mower. He puts in the hours, that guy, and I think he's been rewarded with a great looking pitch.
Okay, maybe get Netflix or something. I don't know. Just find another hobby. Lincoln 2, Northampton 1. We're mainly here for that Danny Rose goal. Lincoln's goals came from McGrandles and Scully. Abby says that sounds like a pirate duo. I think it's more like a firm of chartered accountants, personally. But Lincoln, gritty as well as glamorous now. Michelle, what's to stop them from finishing the season in the position they are now?
Well, who was it that said that they were going to win the league? Who was it? Sam, were you there? It was someone on Quest. Didn't they say they were going to win the league? Was it Sam Allardyce?
I
think it was Sam Allardyce.
And a couple of people like, what? But yeah, I think Michael Afton's doing a great job. You know, he sent McGrandles on and he gets a goal. And okay, you can say sometimes when you're a manager that that's lucky when those things happen, but it does feel everything he's sort of deciding to do and the decision he's making, I'll go in his ways at the moment. And yeah, they're second and they've got a game in hand as well. I know we're talking about Hull sort of potentially almost being nailed on the top two now, but I'm not sure. I think Lincoln, Sam Allardyce wasn't that far off. They could potentially go all the way because they've got that game in hand. And with that game in hand, they win it. They're 3 points above Hull at the top. And yeah, Michael Appleton's doing a fantastic job there. And I don't know if many people saw this coming. I know he got a lot of his own players in, and he's got them playing how he wants, and he's put that stamp on it with the players he brought in. He brought so many in, didn't he? But yeah, I'm pleased for Lincoln, because I think when the Cowley brothers left, and we had them on Quest Danny Cowley a couple of weeks ago, and he still loves them so much, and he say wants them to do well, and he says the town is just so invested, or the city is so invested in them. Such a shame Central Bank isn't full at the moment, but if they were, perhaps that would propel them on to greater heights. But yeah, I really fancy them.
Appleton needed this, Adrian, didn't he? Because his managerial career had been pretty nomadic, and he'd never achieved sort of massive success anywhere. So this is getting his stock up a little bit more.
Yeah, Oxford fans loved him, I know that. But he didn't stick around for great periods anywhere else, did he? So yeah, look, his stock has probably never been higher than it is right now. Clearly, he's got a very good eye for a player, but he's got everyone, to sort of coin a Mikel Arteta phrase, he's got everyone on the boat, hasn't he? They seem to be pulling together, and because there's a number of low knees there, but they seem very, very committed to the cause. Some great football, good width down the sides with two young attacking fullbacks. Hopper, I really like. I know Sam's a big fan of him. Still gutted that he didn't stick around at Southend for longer. Lots and lots to like about Lincoln. The one thing that might cost them is depth. That's the only thing I can think of. If they suffer big injuries to key players, that could derail them. But right now they're on a roll.
Sam, that Danny Rose goal. Should
do. Oh, the overhead kick. Oh ho ho, Danny Rose. Well, that is the best consolation goal you'll ever see. But we're in the 96th minute, so poor old Danny Rose can't even celebrate it.
Today, as we record, Monday, is the anniversary of Trevor Sinclair's overhead kick for QPR against Barnsley. I'm guessing you're thinking that Rose can't hold a candle to that.
I was there, Matt. I was there. No, that is the best. Unbelievable. I love Trevor. It doesn't happen much anymore. Came from bottom tier from Blackpool to QPR and straight into the team. I think QPR finished fifth in his first season. He was phenomenal. And he's one of the people that I've met and gone ridiculously shy because he was such a hero of mine. But yeah, that is the benchmark. That said, Danny Rose is a player that I've always liked and always talked up. And he's not getting... Well, he came off the bench, didn't he, at the weekend to get that goal. He's a really excellent finisher. Northampton, weird. Just unrecognisable from last season. And I remember saying it in the wake of the playoff victory, like letting so many good players go, like McCormack and... Verdane Oliver, obviously, and I don't, you know, the finances inside out, but I just thought it was really odd. And he's built almost a new team, three new players into the side, but they did look a bit more cohesive, that said. And to just go Clarkey, full-blown Clarkey for a moment, I remember saying something similar last year. They've fallen behind 12 times this season and only taken one point, one draw from those 12 games. So... for a Northampton team who we think of being robust and quite old school, there's a bit of a soft underbelly there, which was evident last year as well.
I'll back that up, Sam. Great stat, by the way.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, great stat. I've got one of my own, just so as you know. But it complements your excellent stat. Against the top 11, 1 point. 1 point, which again shows you that they're not this sort of team that bloodies the nose of the big boys. They don't really do that. Against the bottom half, only two defeats. So, yeah, kind of turned into flat track bullies in a way. So, yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Sam's stat was better, I think.
I think so,
Ipswich 0, Peterborough 1 then. Ipswich's woes continuing. They go down here despite Posh not having any shots on target and missing a penalty. Maybe that tells us more about Ipswich than it does about Peterborough. Terrific own goal here. Pretty unlucky with that disallowed one though, Sam. That should have stood, shouldn't it?
Yeah, one of those that you're just watching over and over again and just couldn't get my nut around, to be honest. The whistle went prior to him having the volley. So it suggests that they thought it was out of play. And then no complaints really. I think it was Luke Chambers who hooked it back in. There was no complaints from anyone, which probably underlines where Ipswich are right now. And I've got a notepad page here full of statistics and what have you, but it's just desperate. I think Clarkie's spoken about their record against the top seven, and it's abysmal. Over the last two seasons against top 10 sides, played 27, won 4, drawn 8, lost 15. 20 points from possible 81. And that just shows you where they are. It's a real distinct lack of creativity. No goal scorers in that side at the weekend. I think Gwion Edwards is the top goal scorer with 5. Bishop maybe, I think, has got 4. One shot on target, as you said, Matt, in the 80th minute in a home game. I don't agree with what the local papers have gone with this morning. I think the news broke yesterday that they've started a campaign, in-house campaign, to get rid of the manager. I'm not sure I'm on board with that. I don't think it's particularly helpful. I know you've got to be the voice of the supporters, but I don't think that's particularly helpful for the players with the situation that they're in currently, the way the world is, the way that they're going to have to turn themselves around quickly for another fixture. I'm not sure, but it's not going to end with a playoff campaign, I don't think, at the moment. I just don't really know what Ipswich are. They've tried to reinvent themselves as a possession side, but they have no thrust when they get into dangerous areas.
Can I just politely disagree with Sam on this? Having sort of worked for a local paper in my sort of embryonic journalist days, you've got a job to do, haven't you? And these people can't kid the fans. You've got, you know, they're watching it with real detail. They can't lie. And if the local journalists are sort of pandering and going softly with the club and what they're seeing, then people will see through that. And they'll start to stop buying the papers, they'll stop reading the website, they won't be interested. So I get it, it's definitely not helpful. And Lambert will hate it. They'll probably ban them for the next game.
I was going to say, will they ban them? Yeah, probably. That's what I was thinking, like, they won't be allowed in.
Wouldn't be the first or last.
Can't it stay on the back page, though, in the sports headlines and in the match report and in the critique?
They want to sell papers.
Front page and starting a campaign.
It's the editor, though, Sam. It's not the sports editor's decision. That is the editor of the whole paper. And for me, at the moment, apart from COVID and hospitals being full, probably the biggest story in Ipswich right now is how rubbish they are. And they're a huge club that should be getting promoted from League One. The fact that they're so woeful right now, I think it's front page news. I genuinely do.
You can have sympathy with me because the scars from being abused in Pizza Express on a Thursday night are still quite raw.
Unlike the dough. So this is the East Anglian Daily Times, by the way, that we're talking about.
And listen,
about.
I know one of the journalists there, and he's a great fella. Do you know what I mean? But I think what Adrian says there, I think there's been a few things, hasn't there, in the press. There was the fallout from the commentator saying the wrong goal scorer in the game recently. And it's not always the journalist that puts out the article, is it? It can be someone in a more senior position who's actually the one that pulls the trigger, if you like.
What do you think, Michelle? Should they have kept this on the back page? I mean, there was a story about a new Aldi opening in Ipswich as well, which I guess could easily have been the lead.
Look, there's nothing more important to Ipswich fans than Ipswich right now, you know, and football. We're still going, despite everything going on. It's people's sort of light at the end of the week on a Saturday and a Tuesday. It's really tricky because I really feel uncomfortable with sort of personal attacks and things like that. But I guess it's football and it's based on what he's doing. I read what the guys are talking about and there were some good points. They've lost to the current top seven. They've only scored 2 goals against them. And they are pretty damning statistics. And it would appear they find him, understandably, pretty uninspiring. But I guess some people as a neutral will step back and they'll look at the table and they'll see Ipswich in 9th. Okay, like you said, they're a massive club, Clarkie. You would expect them to be a promotion favourites. But they've got 35 points and they've got 2 or 3 games in hand on the teams around them. So I guess if Ipswich are going to make that change, you'd imagine it must be quite soon, maybe to try and make that ground up with those games in hand. But should a local paper be doing that? I know some local papers that literally have to tiptoe around clubs because, like we said, they don't think they'll get into the next game if they say the wrong thing, or they won't get an interview, or some clubs that I know literally just don't bother with the local journalists sometimes, which I think is really disrespectful. And it's always such a fine line, isn't it? You don't want to annoy clubs, but then again, you want to do your job. So I've been very neutral there, and I've sat on both sides of the fence, haven't I?
Casting vote, Matt.
I'd have gone with Aldi, to be honest. The area's needed one for a long time. It's going to be a big boost.
Abby lives with an Ipswich fan. Get her on.
Abby's going to come on now because she's going to help us build this midweek hack. And my pick comes from League One. I'd like Sunderland to win at Ipswich. There you go. How's that for a segue, Abby?
What a shocking decision that is. No, 23-20 for Sunderland to win at Ipswich, as my husband glares at me. But if you want to punt on 1-1 because it's Sunderland, 5-1.
I'm all over that. 5-1?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the bet, isn't it?
Sam, your selection comes from League One as well. You picked a different one, but I think you're going to be sticking a couple of quid on 1-1 at Portman Road by the sounds of it.
Yeah, like the sound of that, definitely. Yeah, well, Ipswich can't be any worse in front of goal, and Sunderland are the 1-1 specialists. Revert to our previous podcast when Clarkey was on fire with all those stats.
What was your actual pick, please?
I am going for, I didn't have a lot of time here, sorry guys, but I'm going to go for MK Dons against Charlton over 2.5 goals. I'm just going on MK Dons, been quite free scoring recently, and defensive woes for Charlton. I haven't got it in front of me, but I think it's 8 out of the last 9 games they've conceded 2 or more, and I hope for their sake that they can get a little bit better defensively, but still missing a lot of players. Gunter playing centre-half, lots of problems down there, right-hand side at the weekend against Swindon. And just for the sake of this bet, let's hope it's a high-scoring game.
Abby, what are the odds on that, please?
Yeah, odds on for over 2.5 goals, 10-11. MK Dons the favourites, 5-4. Charlton, 21-10.
Okay, one more league to visit. We'll do that momentarily.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League Two headlines. Forest Green go into second after their win at Leighton Orient. Grimsby and Southend remain rooted to the bottom as they both lost at the weekend. And it was Scunthorpe who took 3 points in the 6-pointer with Grimsby. And we're going to start with the goal fest at Boundary Park, though. Oldham beating Newport by 3-2. Newport played for 75 minutes with 10 men. That red card for Labadie, Clarkey, slightly harsh or entirely justified?
Oh, it's definitely harsh. Yeah, no, he. I mean, obviously the arm connected with the player, but that wasn't aggressive. It wasn't an elbow, absolutely not. And yeah, I think the ref just maybe in his own head, it looked worse than it actually was. And clearly that impacted the game. It's only 14 minutes in. I think Newport did pretty well, actually, all things considered, to go as sort of 76 minutes with a man disadvantage and make it pretty competitive. But yeah, Labadie, he is an aggressive player, but for me that was a yellow at most.
What's happened to Newport, Michelle? Seem to have fallen off a cliff. No win in 7 now.
Yeah, I had a few draws in there, but I was thinking, oh, maybe it's the pitch at Rodney Parade. You know, it's been absolutely dire, but there were a number of games called off there. And then I was looking at the highlights and I was looking at the statistics in this one. And Newport, when I watched them early this season, they wanted to play possession-based and they wanted to pass the ball around, but they haven't really been doing that as much either. I'm watching them tomorrow night against Carlisle, and worryingly for them is what they have on their side with the games in hand. The games that have been called off, but actually Carlisle have another 2 on them and they're only a point behind them. So I haven't seen them for a few weeks now, but I'm intrigued to see what they're like against Carlisle, who aren't like a, you know, they've had a loss recently in that draw. But yeah, when you can't get a win from anywhere at the moment, even though they had that really impressive FA Cup game. It's just, yeah, it's going to really knock their confidence.
Sam Oldham, 18 points from losing positions. Is that good that they're resilient or bad that they often fall behind?
It's good that they're resilient, I think. I spoke about Harry Kewell focused on them defensively, but haven't seemed to be able to get that right. Amazing away from home, the second best away form in the division, and that's only their third win. So in terms of a confidence booster, in now which looks like a Harry Kewell team in that he's done quite a lot of surgery, couple of new signings, Nicky Adams' fantastic debut. I thought he'd played for Oldham before, but it's just that little triangle, Bury, Oldham, Rochdale. I get awfully confused and quite a lot of lads like just stay in that location for the entirety of their career. But yeah, he was at Bury, wasn't he? So yeah, he did really well. And this one, Hilsner, he went to Coventry in the summer. And I remember them being quite excited about it because they bought a few players from different European leagues and he's just not featured at all. Speaking to people at Coventry, he's been quite far off that first team. He played in central midfield and he was exceptional. I watched a bit of this game. So, you know, two really good performances there. A game that had everything, actually. Really good fun. There was even a Barney over a penalty at 3-2. It would have taken it to 4-2. McElhaney and Bahambula had a ruckus and the latter skied it as well. So I was laughing my head off. I was praying he put it over the bar after they had the argument, which he did. And then Newport, as they so often do, rallied and really close to nicking an equaliser, which they, you know, scored so many late goals this season. But yeah, back to your question, great resilience, really important win. And they've scored 7 goals over Newport in their 2 victories in quick succession. So a team to keep an eye on, I would say. Maybe not for this season's playoffs, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they had a really good second half of the season.
Speaking of important results, Scunthorpe 3, Grimsby 0. Clarkey, Mr. Cox must have pinned last week's pod up on the dressing room wall and said, go and prove them wrong, because we were saying that they were down and out. And helps when you play a team that's even downer and outer, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen them as down and out myself. I don't think they're, you know, obviously not a top team this season, but I don't think they're among the two worst. They wanted it more, didn't they, in this game? I know it's an old, boring cliche, but they definitely won the battle. Obviously, it's a derby, and they had the aggression. Afterwards, I noticed that Paul Hurst had said he was embarrassed and that his players had lacked fight and lacked heart. So I had a look at tackles, which obviously it tells you a little bit. It was 19 tackles won by Scunthorpe, 8 by Grimsby. So that kind of, the stat backs up what Grimsby's manager saw. So yeah, they didn't have that much of the ball, Scunthorpe, but were really physical and they scored some great goals. I really, really liked the one at the end where Loft, the striker, drops in and then plays in the run of Issa, who played as number 10. And that's a great combination. You can't ask for any more if you're the manager, especially a manager that's brought Issa in from the wing to play centrally. It was a perfect goal for Neil Cox and a great day for him as well. Much needed.
Michelle, for Grimsby, big games coming up against Barrow and Stevenage. It's quite early for Paul Hurst to be going in on his players, isn't it?
Well, maybe he feels he needs a reaction, I suppose. Their goal difference is the worst in the league, not helped by 3-0 defeats like that. And they don't have any games in hand to call upon. They played the most games down there. And yeah, perhaps he's just looking for a reaction. I mean, to be fair to Grimsby, I think they were missing a key couple of players. He basically was giving them a bit of a warning about their future after, from what I saw about the post-match, saying, you know, you've got to play for your places, but also play for your futures. He said something like, if they want to stay in football, they've got to put in far better performances than that. So if he's there long-term, which he's probably saying to them, you know, he wants to be there for a little while, wants to keep them up, then they've got to prove to him that they want to be part of his squad if he's looking already to next season. But he's got a job to do this season first, you know, over the halfway mark now, and he's got to try and get some sort of reaction. 2 massive games coming up. If they don't win them, it's pretty bleak, isn't it?
Certainly is. Last game we're going to look at, Morecambe 3, Colchester 0. from Mariners to Shrimpers then, as Morecambe move back into the playoff places. Still on negative goal difference, but up into six. Are they going to finish in the playoff places, do you think, Sam? Do they need to turn this goal difference around in order to be able to do so?
They probably need to improve away from home, because the home form's been excellent. I think 1-6 and drawn 2 of the last 8. Loads to like about Morecambe this season. Obviously helped by the sending off of Harry Pell on the hour. But Adam Phillips on loan from Burnley, handing all 3 goals. Defensively very sound. That was with a new goalkeeper as well. Anderson on loan from Reading. 19-year-old. I know we spoke about youthful goalkeepers on last week's show with Clarkey, and I thrilled you all with my tales of the wonderfully named Shane Supple. But no, this was a really good performance, some really good goals. And like I said, you know, teams are going to find it really hard going there, given they've got momentum. Colchester's a really funny one, lacking a real focal point. You think back to last season at this stage, I thought their weakness was in midfield this point last year. They had Nublé, they had Poku, who was in unbelievable form, if you remember. I think he had 9 goal involvements. He's created 1 goal this season. They had Norris, and they had Theo Robinson as well. So many options. I think that's where they're going to falter. They're on a really bad run right now. 2 huge games coming up. I think Stevenage and Scunny. And they need to win. And they need to win quickly. Otherwise, the playoffs are going to be a distant memory looking back to last season.
Yeah, I think Morecambe have got much more chance of being in the promotion mix this season. I just don't think there's any money at Colchester. They've sort of let some good players go as well. So, but on Morecambe, you're absolutely right about Phillips, of course. I just think their midfield in general is so full of goals. Mendes Gomez, 8 goals, 2 assists. Phillips, 7 goals, 5 assists. 2 others, Aaron Wieldig and John O'Sullivan, 10 goal contributions between them. That's really impressive. And Morecambe sort of have Cole Stockton as the target man. Doesn't score that often, but the guys behind are really, really chipping in. And what they need to do is start to beat the big boys. I've looked at who they've beaten and whatnot. If you take away 5 defeats against the current top 5, so every team ahead of them, they've lost to, take that away, 1-11, drawn 5, lost 2. They've been phenomenal. So yeah, I think they play, and the goals at the weekend were different class, weren't they? It was real team goals. So yeah, but Morecambe, in with a shout this year, for sure.
I just want to add to that, Clarkey, that I think Derek Adams is a really good manager at this level. Lost his way a little bit up in the Fogar when they went up, but yeah, he seems just to know how to manage a team in this league, and he's doing a wonderful job. I know some people can find him a little bit dour, but he's doing a terrific job there.
Clarkey, can you round off our Acker, please, with a selection from League Two?
Yeah, I can. I liked Michelle's Bristol City bet, by the way. That was my first choice, but I've gone to League Two. Barrow to beat Grimsby. Barrow brought in quite a lot of new players this month. They seem to be really going for it in terms of pushing up into mid-table. Their home form's improving. They recently beat Cheltenham 3-0 there, of course. And Grimsby are rubbish, aren't they, at the moment? They're all over the place. can't really score. Definitely can't keep clean sheets. So yeah, Barrow to beat Grimsby, please.
Abby, Adrian getting his excuses in early there, just in case, albeit it looks fairly secure. What are the odds?
Yeah, it's odds on 4-5 for Barrow to beat Grimsby, and our accumulator as a total comes out at 16-1.
Wow. Okay. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. All right. We're just about out of time. Before we go, though, the obvious question to ask after this weekend: which current EFL manager would be the most deadly / vicious in a snowball fight? Who would you want to be on your side here? So not facing the snowball barrage, but helping you pepper somebody else. Adrian, you can go first.
There was one manager that just immediately sprang to mind, because he looks like a big kid to me. He absolutely looks like a big kid. And that's Oxford's Carl Robinson. I just get the feeling he would love a snowball fight more more than most. And I can just see him stuffing snowballs down the back of, you know, the other team's necks, whether they were little kids, grown-ups, whatever. I think he'd get stuck in with a big smile on his face. Yeah, he'd love it, Carl Robinson. So, yeah, he's my pick.
That's a booking for me if you're ramming snow down other people's backs, by the way. That's not good snowball fighting etiquette. Okay, so one vote for Carl Robinson. Michelle, who are you picking?
I had a couple of choices in my mind, but I went for Wayne Rooney. Fitness levels are still high. He's only just finished playing. I had the pleasure of literally bumping into Wayne Rooney at Glastonbury a few years ago. And we somehow, completely accidentally, ended up in the middle of about 30 people who were all his mates down from Liverpool for the festival. And one of them fell backwards into me, cap down. I think he was wearing masks before they were a thing, sort of balaclava up to his eyes. And he just looked at me as if to say, do not say that you recognise me. And off he bumbled. And then he did get recognised, and literally a swarm of people came towards me, just legged it backstage. And he was still very, very flight of foot then. That was a couple of years ago. We know he could still play until a couple of months ago. I've thought about this, and yeah, he could just add the fitness and I could just be behind him. It's not a problem. He'd be the attacker and I'd just sit back and let him do the work.
Wow, follow that, Sam.
Yeah. I'm on board with both of them so far, actually. Wayne Rooney would be decent, and Carl Robinson, I agree, he'd be really excitable, wouldn't he? He'd thoroughly enjoy himself. I mentioned this to my girlfriend when we were having a walk this morning, and she went straight away, didn't take a breath, the one who looks like a copper. That's Sean Dyche. And he does look like a copper, but he's Premier League. So I've got two. Again, last week I mentioned him. Nathan Jones. Be like a machine gun, wouldn't it? He'd be be climbing on cars, on houses. It'd just be peppering. I'm just petrified of him. And the other one, Jimmy Floyd. Can you imagine what he used to do with his right foot? What he could do with his arm the accuracy and the pace.
Yeah.
There's my two.
Yeah.
And probably Nathan as well. He'd probably put stones in his, wouldn't he?
You see, that informed my choice because I thought about Steve Evans for a period, but then
I thought about Steve Evans as well. Yeah,
he's going to be putting grit, he's going to be putting stones, he's going to be putting all sorts in there and then not taking the blame. But obviously my selection is Alex Neil. It's the only one, and it's purely to ensure that he and I are on the same side, because as regular listeners will know, I am terrified of Alex Neil, and I think that he would destroy me in a snowball fight. That was good fun. Thanks for joining us this week, listener. Thanks also to Sam, to Adrian and Michelle for their insight, and to Abby for her production wizardry. Ali and George will be back with you on Thursday. But until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following @thetotallyshow on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. Or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Money Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.